Good morning, everyone. This is Christopher Glenn with the CBS World News Roundup. It was a weary Senator Orrin Hatch of Utah who brought down the gavel to end 3 days of Judiciary Committee consideration of the nomination of William Rehnquist to be Chief Justice of the United States.
With that, the Rehnquist hearing is finally over. Thank you so much.
This is Fred Graham in Washington. Senator Orrin Hatch seemed relieved at the conclusion of the Senate Judiciary Committee's hearings on William Rehnquist's nomination to be Chief Justice, and well he might. Yesterday, five citizens who lived in Phoenix, Arizona in the early 1970s came to Capitol Hill to swear that they had seen Republican William Rehnquist intimidate minority voters in strong Democratic wards. Rehnquist swears he never did such a thing, and so the credibility of the Chief Justice designate of the United States is on the line. Another problem is President Reagan's use of executive privilege to block the senators from seeing legal opinions Rehnquist wrote as a lawyer in the Nixon administration. Rehnquist's critics say the documents might show that he approved illegal wiretapping and surveillance of anti-Vietnam War protesters. The sense now on Capitol Hill is that Rehnquist's nomination has been hurt by all of this, but probably not enough to prevent his confirmation in about a month. Fred Graham, CBS News, Washington.
The Senate Foreign Relations Committee has sent a clear message to the White House, voting 15-2 in favor of a measure which spells out a number of trade sanctions against the white minority government of South Africa. The committee action virtually assures the full Congress eventually will pass at least some trade penalties, although President Reagan has repeatedly argued against such a move. In Britain, the controversy over South Africa sanctions is sure to roil the atmosphere as the leaders of seven Commonwealth nations gather for a meeting.
The future of the Commonwealth is at stake. It is quite possible that Mrs. Thatcher will go down in history as the person who broke up the Commonwealth. Whether she wants that or not, this is the issue.
Bishop Trevor Huddleston, one of the leaders of the anti-apartheid movement in England. The seven Commonwealth prime ministers are to review South Africa's progress toward ending its racially repressive policies, then decide whether sanctions should be imposed. British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher has stood fast in recent weeks against a rising tide of angry calls for such penalties. In South Africa itself, two bomb blasts early today. One shattered a meat market in the port town of Walvis Bay, reportedly injuring several people seriously. The other explosion was caused by a device apparently placed in a trash bin in a suburb of Cape Town. It blew out some windows. One minor injury was reported. In Beirut this morning, someone threw dynamite from a speeding vehicle in the Christian Eastern section of the city. It rolled under a car and exploded, wounding four civilians. It was the fourth bombing in the Lebanese capital in a week. The other three blasts, all car bombs, killed nearly 60 people. The time now, 3 minutes past the hour.
Starting now, Nissan is out to make the best deals ever to qualified buyers. That's why all over the country, Nissan dealers are saying yes. Yes, with 5.7 annual percentage rate, 36-month term factory-sponsored financing on every new Nissan hard body truck. Or yes, with $500 cash back that you can put towards your down payment or take as a factory check. The choice is yours for a limited time. Pick 5.7 or 500 cash back on tough Nissan hard body 4x4s with the biggest V6 in the class and the biggest factory standard tires. Pick 5.7 or cash back on roomy king cabs with fold-away jump seats for an extra passenger or cargo. Or pick 5.7 or cash back on our lowest sticker-priced regular bed hard body. So if you've been looking for a rugged hard body truck with an unbelievably agreeable deal, ask your participating Nissan dealer, because he's going to say yes. The name is Nissan.
14 hours of nonstop bargaining has turned the trick in Hollywood. The negotiators hammered out a tentative new 3 years actors contract that will avert a strike in the entertainment industry if it wins approval of the union boards of directors and of the membership. Carol Akiyama speaks for the organization that represents 150 production companies.
My understanding is that the joint board vote will be finalized on August 4th, and there will then be approximately three-week process of obtaining the mail referendum vote.
Twice this week, the bargainers overlooked self-imposed deadlines to continue the talks. No details of the proposed agreement were revealed. There's no settlement, however, nor much of a prospect of one, as steelworkers of USX Corporation begin a second day on the picket lines. Ned Potter has the latest from Chicago.
The last strike against U.S. Steel lasted 116 days. That was 27 years ago. But the steel industry has been through such turmoil since then that nobody says the current strike will be easy or short. U.S. Steel, now renamed USX, says it is in deep financial trouble. It would like givebacks from each worker of more than $3 an hour. The Steel Workers Union says the greatest concession it will allow is a wage freeze. It says workers made large concessions in 1983. And it did little good. American steelmakers have been harmed by foreign competition and non-unionized mills. The demand for steel is also steadily dropping. Plastic is often used in its place. Many of the picketing workers say that even after they return to work, they wonder how much longer their jobs will last. Ned Potter, CBS News, Chicago.
In an effort to help struggling American farmers, the Reagan administration has approved the sale of 4 million tons of surplus wheat to the Soviet Union. Senator Mark Andrews of North Dakota says not only farmers will benefit.
Looking at it from the city standpoint, there are 50,000 jobs created off the farm for every $1 billion worth of agricultural exports. So it's darned important that we get these agricultural exports, not just for those of us from farm states, but for the people from Boston and New York and Baltimore and Philadelphia and the rest of the places.
Nevertheless, officials in Australia and Canada, chief competitors of the U.S. in the world wheat market, say their trade situations could be hurt by the American move. Domestically, a helping hand and hay has saved the day in many parts of the drought-dry South and Midwest. Here's Mel Jenkins of CBS radio affiliate WIS in Columbia, South Carolina.
The rain did not work in South Carolina this year, but two things are working.
The system as well as the hay.
State Agriculture Commissioner Les Tindall helped get the system working, bringing in over 2,300 tons of hay that has made a difference.
It has saved livestock from dying, both beef and dairy cattle.
The system included sophisticated computer programs from the Agriculture Department at Clemson University, generous donations, people, trucks, and trains, and an operations center here that looks like a war room, all coming together to deliver enough hay to load 180 tractor trailer trucks and bring it in from all over the U.S. and Canada. Who got the hay? Elwin Deal from Clemson has been there to see.
They tended to be elderly farmers, ones that are 55 and over, and small acreage, small numbers of livestock, and they have been just superbly appreciative of the effort that has gone under, that's been going on so far.
Some of the people may still be forced off the land, with the drought adding to overburdened debts and low prices. But cooperation and donations keep growing as another 4,000 tons of hay is being sent to this state. Mel Jenkins for CBS News, Columbia, South Carolina.
Sightseeing on the Nile is on the agenda for Vice President George Bush today. Then he sits down with President Mubarak for serious talks, continuing the process in Egypt he's already undertaken in Israel and Jordan. Margaret Rogge in Cairo has some background on the discussions.
The United States gives Egypt more than $2 billion a year in economic and military aid, but that apparently is not enough now. Hard hit by the oil recession and the drop in tourism, Egypt wants a sharp increase in America's cash contribution. President Hosni Mubarak has said he'll also ask Bush for relief on this year's payment on Egypt's $4.5 billion military debt, and he'll ask for America's support for a special loan from the International Monetary Fund. They'll also discuss Bush's visits to Jordan and Israel in the wake of recent attempts to revive the Middle East peace process. Margaret Rogge for CBS News, Cairo.
10 past 7.